The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
Well, that was the Prog World Orchestra featuring Mr. Mike Portnoy, Mr. Neil Morris, Mr. Steve Morris, and the man we have on the phone right now, Mr. Randy George.
Yeah, it was a Prague. It was a Prague Christmas, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. Yeah. We told you he came bearing gifts, so we're going to bring him on right now. Hello, Mr. Randy George. Hello?
What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
No, good deal. Good deal. It's good to hear from you, my friend. It's Diana.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, darling. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
3D, right?
Yeah. See, I was trying to be all formal, man. You had to like get like real.
Well, it's been about 3 years now, huh?
It has been about. Yeah. It has been like that. It has been like that. It's been, yeah, we were joking because you were the first one, you know, for prog time, you know, that got the show started. And we, you know, and we have been wanting to talk to you forever. You've been so busy. You've been doing such magnificent things. You've been all over the planet. You've been rocking with everybody under the planet. How have you been doing?
Oh, man. It's been great.
Yeah?
It's been great, yeah. Yeah, we did, what, 51 shows last year across four continents.
Yeah, you did.
Similitude of a Dream.
Yeah, you did.
And then Morris Fest.
More stuff than that. I tell you what, Similitude of a Dream, when you guys came out, first of all, thank you for involving Radio Memphis and, of course, allowing Phil, you know, to kind of help kick off everything when you guys got started on all of that escapade. It was a fantastic effort from the Neil Morris band, from every last one of you. And, you know, we couldn't have been prouder to be playing that right here on the station. And I tell you, there's a couple songs on there that every time we get to play them during prog time, you know, we get into this like really quiet mode, you know, and it's we take cell phones like in tribute of like lighters up in the air. Like we have our own concert, you know, and we're waving into the video screens and stuff while everybody's tuned in and listening and stuff because you have that kind of effect on us.
Oh, well, thanks. I don't know. I guess it's because we all grew up listening to bands that had the same effect on us.
Oh, fantastic. Some good stuff. So so you've been busy. You've been touring, you know, the planet, all the continents, coming in and out. Have you had time to, like, stop down, breathe, you know, kiss your family and all this good stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, after the last tour, I moved from California to Arizona. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was happening right as the tour ended. So then the next 4 months were spent, you know, doing renovations and all the stuff here at the house. And it was probably, you know, the first of this year where things finally, you know, settled. And we were able to settle into a regular life with everything in place and not waiting on a floor or waiting on, you know, something to
perfect. Be done. Well, perfect. So, so your world's kind of been upside down then for quite some time.
You know, well, it was there for most of last year. This year, it's been more of a process of just settling into a new lifestyle here in Arizona.
Yeah.
At least up through the summer. Then the new Morris Band stuff took over between doing Morris Fest, which we did the musical.
Yes.
And then, you know, we were tracking the way the album, the Great Adventure, I keep wanting to say the grand Adventure or something. This is going to be really tough, I can tell.
Okay. That's okay.
But
we're riding
it. You know, the timing worked out as such that, bam, you know, we got hit with putting it together and tracking right at the same time as Morris Fest.
Right.
So it was like double the amount of music that we had to process, and everybody sort of had to get their stuff done rather quickly because we were really behind the curve time-wise. So.
Oh, I get it.
So, yeah, that took over the last.
You know, it's funny.
Because then there's all the stuff that goes with that artwork and booking the tour. And,
yeah. You know, what's funny is that it seems like, you know, once Similitude of a Dream kicked off and you guys kind of really got on the road and started doing that, it seems like there was this huge snowball effect, you know. And, you know, we have this conversation all the time about you guys on Radio Memphis when we talk about, you know, the progressive rock and the progressive, you know, genre. And, you know, for lack of better words, Randy, it almost seemed like when you guys came out of the gate, I mean, kicking and screaming and rolling all over the place, there was such a shot in the arm, you know, to prog music. And I kind of wonder is that, you know, because we paid attention to that crazy hectic schedule that all of you, each and every one of you, not with just, the, you know, with Neil Morse, but everybody had other stuff going on too, that everybody was really trying to rise to the occasion and stuff. And I mean, do you feel like that, that you guys knew that there was another shot in the arm to Prague and that you had to ride this wave?
Well, yeah, I think that there was a good upswing with Similitude. We all felt like it was going to be a big album,
right,
in terms of things happening, and clearly the tour and all the sold-out shows that happened and all of that. It was great to see some growth in the band's audience and that more people are discovering it. So, yeah, I think, you know, I think we really wanted to, at least some of us wanted to just go right into it after the last tour.
Absolutely.
Sort of strike while the iron was hot. That was sort of the idea.
Of course.
And of course, you know, as usual, somebody's schedule would get in the way and we would basically end up, you know, pushing it off until this year.
Right.
To do. But yeah, I think, you know, coming off of that, we were certainly, you know, geared to go. I think we got a little thrown off by the timing. And, well, you know, I think the idea was also, I know Neil wanted to continue the Similitude theme into another album. He sort of already kind of had that in his mind at the end of the last tour, and he just kind of wanted to jump right into it. That would have been ideal, but not everything always, you know.
It doesn't always work out that way, does it?
Sorry?
I said it doesn't always work out that way, does it?
Yeah, not everything always goes to plan. So, yeah, it was one of those things where that's why the timing got thrown off. We actually did it in January, but we weren't happy with the album we wrote, and Neil rewrote it.
Oh, wow.
And we had two versions of the album, and then we had to decide what to do, and it was like August before we could get back together and sort it out and get drum tracks.
Wow.
That's what put us behind the curve. But, yeah, you know, so we'll see. You know, we'd like to see that continue into this next tour. We don't quite have as many dates yet. I'm not sure if we'll add more yet or not, but
okay.
We'll see.
We'll definitely see. Of course, and everybody that's tuned in right now, hanging out with us on Radio Memphis Prague Time, we are talking to the amazing, amazing multi-instrumentalist. Everybody knows you, he plays bass, but, you know, this guy can play it all. You guys just don't, you know, have to realize, Mr. Randy George. Again, congratulations on the stuff as far as with Similitude. And, of course, this goes into, you know, a lot of other things that you guys have ultimately been working on. And, you know, of course, thank you for letting us play some stuff from Prague at Christmas and all that good stuff. And I know we've got some treats for later. But more interestingly, and I guess this is the part that intrigues me, and I know because Phil was telling me about this, is that you have managed, in the middle of all the craziness that you just laid out, you had managed to spend some time with your lovely wife. And I'm not talking about, in terms of as far as just being at home, but I'm talking about musically, that you guys were able to work a couple of things out.
Yeah, we, you know, once, like I said, once we got all the construction done that we had to do, we just settled in. And, yeah, it just felt like, let's write some music. It's one of the things we really wanted to do. That's why we built the studio here.
Perfect.
And, you know, some stuff I had laying around and some stuff we just wrote off the cuff. We've got about 5 songs. They're not all finished, but yeah, it was the one you have, I believe, is the first one we wrote, the very first one.
That Stars and Moonlit Skies.
I had laying around for a few years, wrote it back in Fullerton, but I had never had any vocal on it. And so I sat down to flesh out the vocals with her, and she was just doing some vocalizations, as you do, to just sort of explore the melodies that you want. And so the little hook line is the vocalization that she just did off the cuff, and I thought, that's actually a really great line just like that. So we kind of worked that into the arrangement and stuff. And just a little song about the experience of, you know, being out in the Sonoran Desert up against the Superstition Mountains. And, you know, we don't have light pollution, and we got stars like you wouldn't believe.
Wow.
And the sunsets are amazing. So this song is just about the whole experience of being here. Wildlife, the whole vibe.
Wow.
Very cool.
Wow. It sounds like you guys went into seclusion there for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some good stuff. So writing with her, so actually sitting down and writing, you know, with her. And again, this is, you know, you have to forgive me because this is kind of new to me, Randy. And I knew that your wife was musically inclined and stuff. But I guess, you know, I guess it's since, you know, so much focus has been on, you know, doing stuff with Neil Morse and, you know, and the gang, that I didn't realize just how much, you know, connection and how much stuff you had as far as with your wife and writing and stuff like that. And I mean, when you guys,
she's an accomplished musician, and she hasn't really had an opportunity to explore being in a progressive rock band, but she certainly knows how to compose and has a degree, and she's very talented. So
good for her.
She's unique. She's got a unique voice and a unique character that works in the progressive rock genre.
Oh,
very well.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Does she know that she's getting lured into the progressive rock genre? I'm just curious.
Oh no, she was part of Cal Prog.
Cal
Prog was the promoter in Southern California.
I gotcha.
Who put on all the shows down there in Orange County, Jim Harrell. And she was the production manager for all of those shows.
Oh wow. Okay.
So she's quite familiar with, you know, the whole environment. She's educated. She can do a lot of things.
So she can handle all of you. Good.
Yeah, so this is home, you know, it's home base for her as well. That's probably why it works so well.
Good.
So Randy, did you play all the instrumentation on there?
Okay, all the instrumentation, yeah. I did all the guitar, all the bass, keyboards. Scott Connor, who I played with in a couple of past bands here in California, he played drums for me.
Ah, very cool.
And Pam did all the vocals. And, you're listening to my rough mix. I haven't actually... Rich Mauser is going to be mixing this, and so he's going to get started on that actually pretty soon, but... you're still listening to my rough mix, so, you know.
Hey.
Fair warning.
You're rough mix, man? Okay. Okay. I'm willing to guarantee everybody that it's actually not going to be noticeable that it's a rough mix.
Well, you know, the mix is everything.
Of course it is.
Rich does magic things with mixes.
Of course it is.
I'm excited to hear what he does.
Absolutely. Sure. Now, when he does that for you, I mean, is this one of those times where, I mean, do you actually just kind of take your hands off the steering wheel and just let him have it?
Oh, yeah. He'll send a pretty much a finished mix for you. And then you sort of can dial it in from there. I want to hear more vocal in this verse, or I want to hear a little, the guitar thing needs to come out a little better. Make the drums a little, you know, bigger, bass a little punchier, just little things, but he'll get it in the zone and you can just dial it in from there. We do the same thing with the Neil Morse Band album.
Ah, perfect.
Very cool.
Very perfect. Now, as far as the actual album with your wife, you know, when that finishes up, I mean, do you and her have any plans as far as, you know, actually playing it and, you know, touring it and doing anything with it?
You know, Diana, you're breaking up a little bit.
I'm sorry.
It's a little bit hard to hear, so I didn't quite catch all that.
Oh, I'm so sorry. As far as the album that you and your wife are doing, once it gets finished and stuff, are you guys planning on doing any type of touring with that or playing out with that?
Yeah, I'd like to. I think the idea is to put together a cool band to do it.
Okay.
And I may feature some of those people as well on it. Still kind of searching for who would be right for what. Sure. I think we're trying to dial most of the music in ourselves so that we know we have what we like and then, you know, have other people sort of put a little bit of their mold on it and, you know, find a good group that synergizes. And, yeah, I'd love to bring it to the stage and, you know, give it it's going to have a band name. It's not like we're not trying to make it like a solo thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's we'd like to we'll find a good band name to attach to it, and just create a whole vibe.
Perfect.
Very cool.
Very perfect.
Very cool. I think I listened to it last night, actually on my headphones before I went to bed, and I'm really digging it. So why don't we do this, Randy? Why don't we take a real quick break? We're gonna play Stars in Moonlit Sky by the as of now untitled project with Randy and his wife. And we'll be right back with more with Randy George. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right, we'll be right back.
that was Mr. Randy George and his future untitled project with his wife called Stars and Moonlit Skies. I really like that song.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are tuning in to Radio Memphis Prog Time. And if you haven't figured it out, we've been talking with Mr. Randy George. Of course, everybody knows him from Neil Morris, but we know him from everything else under the planet. He's played with a lot of different folks and made a lot of magical things happen. That right there is a fantastic song. And in fact, I think Randy is still on the phone.
He is still on the phone. Okay. Let's try to bring him back right now.
All right.
Hello, Randy. Hello?
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully it's better this time, volume-wise.
Is it a little bit better for you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good, good. She has got a fantastic voice. What a lovely voice.
Yeah, it's really unique. Like I said, for a prog singer, she's just got that quality. It's hard to pin down what that quality is. It's not certainly not the kind of voices you hear on shows like The Voice.
No, no. I mean,
she is
very, very.
There's just an innocence to it, and there's a
unique
purity to it. You know, just as a tone wise in the tonality of it, and it's a language you kind of just have to listen to. Prog music to really understand it, you know. I mean, sure. You grow up listening to it, and you just get a sense of that whole vibe, and that's why singers like Roger Waters really thrive, because it just had such a unique sound. David Bowie, same thing. People really just identified with this pure voice that, you know, didn't sound like anybody else.
Absolutely, absolutely. She definitely has a very unique sound, and that right there is what pins it. You just said it. You know, it is a very, very unique, and that style belongs in progressive music. And so, yeah, well done, man. She's a fantastic singer. Wow, I like that.
Well, thanks.
Yeah,
that's the single from the album. it's the short song. You know,
yeah, the 3-minute and 40-second radio song.
Yeah. I don't know. We're still writing, so you never know.
It could be the 20-minute epic.
To have shorter songs, like 7-8-minute songs, as opposed to, you know, doing like with the Neil Morris band, where it's 25, 30 minutes or 50, whatever.
The opus. Yes, we understand.
So yeah, it's nice just to do songs. I think good songs that are just have the elements to it without trying to being some crazy construct. I just love that. I've always had. I think that's what's so endearing about Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they embodied it in 7 to 8 minute songs, mostly a few longer. But bands of the day, they just wrote good songs. They were creative with the music, but they focused on making good songs. And I think that's what we want to keep doing is just find the song and make it a really good song. Because the music's easy once you have the song.
I agree.
You can go nuts on the music if you've got the song intact. But finding the song, you can write all kinds of music and then look for a song in it. And you may find it, you may not, you know. But sometimes you strike magic if you both find your way to the center of that together.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened with that song, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd already pulled the music together, so we just needed to find the vocals and the song in it.
It's interesting that you mentioned Yes. Actually, when I listened to that last night, I was trying to put my finger on what it kind of had a similar vibe to. And it kind of reminds me of the latter album, with the Homecoming video game or whatever it was called back then, kind of with some of that more earthy, you know, kind of vibe going on in that song. And you know, her voice, well, you know, it's not John Anderson's voice, but it has some of that fairy-like quality to it. Like, it kind of airy a little bit, which is really...
Oh, but the vocal lines are similar.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of like the way John would sing. Use your voice as an instrument, not so much...
Exactly.
Not so much to be a dispassionate singer from the music, which, you know, is great in the style of music that it worked, you know.
Sure.
Especially 40s and 50s stuff. But, you know, in this day and age, it, you know,
it's pretty much anything goes. You know,
yeah.
You can find an audience for just about anything you do, if you know how to get it in front of them.
Exactly.
We were really surprised at how well things had turned out with the songs that we've done so far. And so we're just really excited about it. And I'm excited for people to hear it. A few people who have really seemed to like it. And she deserves the chance to be out there.
You know, absolutely she does. I'm going to vote for her too, man. If I see her name come up on some stuff, I'm going to vote for her. I am. I'm going to totally vote for her. But you know something, Randy, what I appreciate what you just said earlier about writing a good song. And that is such a simple statement that everybody takes for granted, okay? And, you know, one of the things that you are absolutely brilliant at is not only writing a good song, but when you write a good song, yes, you know, of course, the progressive elements are there. But you also write a song that can kind of, you know, transcend over several genres. That makes sense? And so, that was another thing for me too, listening to this. And it was like, okay, yes, the progressive world is going to love this, but then I can sit there and go, I can understand how the pop world's going to go, man, what are they doing? And I can understand, you know, somebody that plays rock or plays rock guitar is going to go behind this, go, man, what is he playing? And so this is, and I know that you don't think of it like that. You know, you simply write because you know what you're doing and you know what's coming from you. If somebody comes up to you because you hear this all the time, they print this all the time. People, musicians go look for advice these days, and the first thing everybody tells you is like, you got to have a good song. Okay. How do I know it's good? You know what I mean? And I mean, what would you tell them? How do they know they were going to be writing a good song? How do you know?
Well, I guess, you know, I used to think I could just answer that. But I don't think this is really a straight forward answer, because to be honest with you, anything that somebody else will like is a good song to them, whether you and I think it's a good song or not. So,
okay.
You know, it's one of those things where it's hard to be objective in that respect about serious music.
Right.
When you realize that, you know, that's just our perceptions of it. I don't know how true any of it really is, you know, in the end. I just think it's just the way we like to characterize and personify the things we like. But you know, it's like to tell somebody, how do you know you've got a good song? Well, I guess if people want to hear it, then you have a good song. Play it and see if people like it.
You know,
that's the simplest form.
That is the simplest form. And I tell you, though, and it's, you know me, I'm always trying to, you know, pull on you for a second, you know, and poke at you for a minute. And but it's funny you say that, because, you know, it's hard to say something, you know, when you're talking about like your own, this is like your album, your music, you know. Now, you've also sat in the seat where, you know, you have played, you know, support, and you've shown up on, you know, numerous recordings, you know, for some various artists, the name, you know, the list as long as our leg, you know, and very well-known people. And in essence, you're interpreting, you know, their vision and their idea, you know what I mean, as far as what you think that, you know, what you think they want for their song is. So that idea it changes to where you're listening for something and going, I think this is what they want, and I'll know that, right? Because it's not the focus is not on you and your music, it's on them and their music. So
again you're probably going to just do what you perceive to be the best thing for what you're hearing,
right?
Whether that is what they wanted in the end or not is an entirely another issue. I've had it both ways, because I just actually recorded a track for they're in Barcelona. I don't even know the name of the band. I just know the guy's name.
Okay.
He paid me about a year ago. You know, I'll pay you now, but we won't be ready for you to record the track for like another year. But,
nice. Okay.
So I finally got the track, and I did it, and it was really interesting and stuff. But you know, and I'm thinking, well, you know, he's like, you can do whatever you feel to do here. I'm listening, and it's like, you know, what kind of song is this to me? And I'm listening to what the guitar is doing, and the guitar's got a pretty dominant groove thing going on, and I'm like, I can't really, you know, it would clash to do anything against that guitar line, so I need to play with the guitar through most of it, because it's very guitar driven,
right?
And I just stuck to what the guitar did, and when I had room to branch out, I kept it within the vibe of the song.
Right.
And I just, you know, and then I sent it to them. They loved it. And they felt it was perfect. But, you know, I've done the same thing for other people. They come back and say, oh, well, could you change this? Could you change that? Maybe you stick more to the guide bass that I originally did, which, you know, would make sense. Well, don't pay any attention to my bass track. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, maybe you could do something more like what I did. And it's like, there are just some people who they think they know what they want and they're not really sure because they're just searching for it. And it's like, well, you know, if you know what you want, and you know, hire me if you want me to do what I do.
Right.
If you're not sure what you want, you know, you have to figure that out because, yeah, it's really hard to convey to people this is what I want, unless you know how to write it out, and then you hire people who can read very well.
I got you.
Notate it right, hire people who read well, you'll get exactly what you want. I learned that on my first solo album with violins and oboes and woodwinds and cello. I learned real fast. Wow. You get the right players, they know how to read. They'll play anything you want. It'll sound exactly like what you wanted.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind. You know, I should have, I don't know why I did, but it just did because it was the first time I'd ever done that with something I arranged for those instruments. I didn't know what I was doing.
Well, it was probably
an old cakewalk.
It was probably magical. I mean, you wrote it out. It's on paper, and it's like, okay, I can hear it in my head. But when you hear that.
I printed it out from Cakewalk.
No.
So, yeah, so they made good use of it. It didn't look terrible. It could have been notated much better. It's the first oboe guy was like his dad's world famous, and so he's like this really disciplined symphony player, and he was giving me all kinds of grief about how I notated it because I didn't use the right clef or whatever. He's got me out of bed. He actually called me later and apologized for being such an ass because, you know, he just had a bad day. I think once he heard the song, when I sent him a mix of the song, I think he realized, oh, this wasn't so bad after all. This actually sounds really bad. But at the time, he just gave me all kinds of grief about the notation. And he played it down and he made it happen.
Nice.
And after that, I got Nancy Rumble to do oboe because she was much easier.
she didn't care what clef you used.
she's a Grammy winner, so, you know, hey.
Very nice, very nice. Well, that's the thing about it, too, is that when you're searching out, musicians, you know, and things like that, obviously, you know, of a certain caliber and stuff. And the cool thing about you, whether it's, you know, named or unnamed, I mean, of course, you know, these people are in their own right, very, very successful and very, you know, good at what they do. And when you're able to pull those kind of people together and you're able to, you know, create and put out what you put out on paper to hand to them, you know, those projects come together so quick, you know, and you're able to kind of flush it out quickly. But that's the way it's supposed to work, right?
Yeah, well, there's people who are really good at going in and just sitting down and reading it off a sheet of paper, and then there's people that are good at coming up with the ideas. They're not necessarily always the same. Mm. Usually people are really good at one or the other. There are a few that are good at both, but most will lean towards one or to the other much more so.
Right, right. Yeah. Do you know anybody, like off the top of your head, that you've always kind of admired that actually can do both?
Oh, I don't know. I would never go into a session and have a chart thrown in front of me and the count, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and they're counting off the actual take, you know, and I've, sat down for maybe 15 seconds, and you've got to be on it, and you got to know it and play it.
Yeah.
You know, even if you've never seen it before. As a matter of fact, I knew a guitarist in L.A., Joe Jewell, and he did that kind of stuff. He'd play, like, at the Oscars. He'd be in the orchestra, and they'd call him for those kinds of good, amazing guitar player. But, you know, he described seriously scary, harrowing situations where they do that. You go in, they throw the stuff in front of you, and they're counting it off, and it's go now.
Oh,
you don't
wow.
even have time to read it through it or look it over.
Wow.
And bam, you got to nail it. And these people do, and they show up, and they just, that's just a gig, and they do it, you know?
See?
Amazing. That's amazing to me.
That is amazing. I'm like, that kind of gave me like these little cool little goosebumps just now, because I'm like, that's magic. That's magical to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a good skill. It's skills. They went to school. They learned their skills. Those are school skills that you can learn if you're disciplined and you go to school and you do well in that environment. You'll be that kind of player because that's what they train you to do in school.
Right.
They don't train you to do what I do. private seat of your pants.
What? But you do it so well. I mean, and that's the beauty about what you do, Randy. And you know, and there's a lot of people that are listening and stuff that almost kind of want to kind of listen to like your whole situation and you know the way you do things because they're like, man, you know, you give us hope.
Yeah. Well, I used to be younger.
Oh, now it comes out. Okay. Now it comes out. No, I get it. You know, but you're right. You know, being able to work with individuals and being able to, you know, work with musicians and, you know, and things like that. So, you know, you've got all this craziness. Have you found that you're going to be able to kind of calm it down for a second, for a few moments? When does your world kick back up and get stupid crazy again?
At the end of January when rehearsals start for the tour.
Yeah.
And until then, yeah, it's, you know, Christmas time, end of the year, total show wind down. It's not, I have a video to make for the band, but that shouldn't, hopefully, if everybody gets me their stuff, it won't take very long. But yeah, other than that, I'm just rehearsing for the tour, and
yeah,
telling my daughter's coming for a few days this week, so.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, you know, it's Christmas.
It is Christmas. Yeah. It is Christmas. What's the best thing about Christmas for you other than family? Of course, it's always family, but there's always got to be some kind of, there's always like some special tradition or some special something that somebody, you always look forward to because it's Christmas, and there's got
to
be
something. Yeah, I always look forward to December
26th. Aww.
For Boxing Day or rest?
Whatever. It can be any day you want it to be. At that point, I know it's a week of everybody's doing their own thing. Show. And then there's just no more Christmas to deal with.
Yeah.
Except the commercials don't really stop, but whatever.
Right. I get it.
I don't have any kids at home. We don't. It's hard to create Christmas traditions when you don't have a lot of family around.
Right.
You know, my wife had them in her family. I had them in my family when I was in a place where our family actually got together at Christmas.
Right.
You know, now it's just us. We don't make too big of a deal out of it.
Okay. That's okay.
But we look forward to, like, just what people do around here. And there's a lady who lives up on the top of a hill in a house that is... it's just a shell that stands out from everything, and since she's the only house up there, and she got like a big flagpole, and she creates a Christmas tree out of lights.
Oh, nice!
And so that's right next to us. And so we look forward to that coming up every year because it's just like floating in the sky to us. Because when it gets dark here, it gets really dark.
Oh wow! Yeah.
And so it's cool to see that and see other people. You know, there's a few families around in these area parts, so there are a few people who do all the decorations and whatnot, but otherwise, yeah, we're just at that age where we're chill.
You're just hanging out and stuff. Out of curiosity, do you think any way possible, I don't know, like maybe even in a dream, that you guys will come anywhere near Memphis, by Memphis, through Memphis, around Memphis next year? I'm just curious.
Well, our home base is only 4 hours from there.
I know, and that's what I was kind of thinking too, but I understand when you're running tight schedules and stuff, how, you know, 4 minutes can mean something to you.
February 2nd, we'll be playing in Nashville.
Yeah.
Okay.
We had tried hard last year trying to
get... It's as good as it gets. Well, yeah, there's just no places there that want to put up the money.
We had...
I think they don't feel as though there's enough of an audience that it's going to warrant the cost of doing the show. We don't come cheap.
Courting is over, man. This is like, you know, this is like proposals and, you know, lease to buy options. I get it.
Yeah, this isn't a bag of leases.
Funny as that might sound, and it isn't for selfish reasons at all. It's expensive to tour.
Of course it is.
You know, everything keeps going up in cost.
Right.
But the gigs keep going down in guarantee.
I know. So they're
working against each other, and it's really hard to make a tour profitable. you're just happy you don't lose money, but you got to make something because
right.
You're not going to pay the bills otherwise. So,
right.
You know, it's just an industry that's been hit so horribly hard in that respect over the decades. Even bands like Yes and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All the big heavy hitters.
Bands to play arenas and stuff are playing much smaller venues. While some bands still thrive, you know.
Right.
Like Styx, they still put on a great show. And
right.
Kansas, you know, they're not exactly doing arenas.
No, they're not.
It's a world that's been shrunk. And some of us, I'm sure some of those guys got shrunk much further than they wanted to be because they were at the top at one point. And it's hard to feel like you've just been reduced to this club band or whatever, you know.
Right.
And you feel like you deserve some respect, especially when all your peers are still getting it and they were never as good.
Yeah.
I just caught that.
Sure, I'm sure that has to go through some of their heads, you know.
Yeah.
Of course. But you know, it's funny, Randy, and you know, being able to tour, and yeah, as far as playing some of the venues and stuff that everybody's playing now. It's a little different because of the audience, you know, band connection now, you know, whereas, you know, before it was there, it was so hard to get connected to a band because, I mean, there was like oceans and, you know, and security and like a whole, you know, wall and like, you know, a net, you know, before you could even touch the stage to get to them, you know, and, you know, but in this time, you know, the fan connection with the band and stuff is so strong that even that kind of evolves into somewhat of a thing where, you know, there's more audience and there's more people to play with and you get a little more response from. I mean, wouldn't you think?
Well, you know, you try.
Yeah, I know.
You try. You try your best to do whatever. But, you know, the industry has become pretty much what we've made it. You know, I think the people who grew up with this kind of music have pretty much become the industry.
Yeah.
Inside Out, Thomas Bobber, you know, he was a fan.
Right.
But he started a record label a long time ago, and now Sony owns it, and they're funded, and they've got Dream Theater. He was a Dream Theater fan, and now he's got Dream Theater.
I know, isn't that crazy? Yeah. Isn't that crazy? That's some crazy stuff.
You know, and there are other record labels who have prog guys in there that understand the prog market and understand, you know, the business.
Right.
That exists there.
Right.
And, you know, but most of the industry is driven to what's popular and, there, you know, doesn't have anything to do with prog. That's old. We've become the old fogies. And,
no. I mean, look.
Yeah.
Think about it, Randy. It's no different than when prog was trying to make its, you know, make its surgence, you know, in the beginning, right? But you have to admit, now, when you guys go across seas, you know, the things change, right? You know, because of that audience, you know, and that audience is different as far as than what, you know, the States and, you know, and everybody here is kind of geared towards and accustomed to, you know, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, the focus on music programs, you know, just, I mean, I could go on and on and on and on about it, but, you know, I have to sit there, I have to believe, you know, I mean, because worldwide, you guys have such a, such a fan base, you know, and there's such a huge love, you know, for all of you, you know, together under Neil Morse, and which each of you do separately, there's such a huge love for you, and so I would have to think that when you guys go across seas and stuff like that, that's a different animal, isn't it?
I'm not sure I'm following what the question is.
I guess it's not even necessarily a question. I think the thing about the industry, I agree with you, you know, as far as here in the States and stuff like that, but I almost feel like there's a reset button. Does that make sense? And I almost feel like we're at that reset button, you know, remember when, like, Chrysalis was coming around, okay, and remember when everybody was just an indie before they became big indies. Remember what I'm talking about?
The world was new, but they didn't have the internet.
Yeah,
that's what made it possible. That whole business model was built on a world that didn't have an internet.
Right.
They didn't know what to think when the internet came around, and all of a sudden, you know, Napster came around, and they were like, "What just happened?"
Right.
You know.
Right.
And now ever since then it's kind of like somebody fired, you know, into the crowd, and they've been reeling ever since.
Right.
And so, you know, but the I think there's a couple caveats to kind of where you're headed with this. Is one is the internet has made it possible for the artist to be his own record label and present his music to a much wider audience that he'd never have access to.
Sure.
All right. So you have all the resources at your fingertips online to do pretty much what any record label does. You just have to work smart.
Yeah.
The other half of it is going out and playing. And when you do go around and you see all the fans around the world, I mean, it's a good feeling to know people everywhere receiving the music and they love the band. And it's great to go out and watch them listen to the music and watch them cry at the end. And they always do. And they're probably going to again, because even I do in this show. You know, it's like similitude. It's just that wow.
Wow.
You know, and so, you know, you can't really put a price on the experience of witnessing how it affects people. I couldn't tell you why it does. We're just playing the music that we play, and whatever happens between us and them in the air isn't my responsibility, or probably anything that I even cooked up, or that Neil or anybody else cooked up. We just do what we do, and if the magic happens between us and the audience, we can only be grateful that we have that, and that, you know, it's in hope that we can keep doing it. I guess we will as long as we can.
Of course.
Well, I know I told you the story the night of the kickoff show for Similitude of a Dream, and I've sold this story on the air since. The guy who went with me, who was a former professional wrestler and major metalhead, doesn't understand prog music whatsoever. When about halfway through the set, I look over and he's got tears streaming down his cheek. And then during the last song, you know, and I see him and he's not just crying a little bit, but he's full out like baby crying. There's something about the music that can touch, I think, anybody. And that's what's really, I think, what's cool about what you guys do and what a lot of the other newer prog that I listen to is that it can reach to people that, you know, I think maybe listening to a Gentle Giant album or even some Yes stuff might go over some people's heads. But there's something about what you're doing and Steven Wilson and all that that is able to touch people who come from that more metal background, but yet they get the message and they get the emotional impact of what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I guess we're the best compromise between everything that was embodied by the Beatles and the British Invasion and the heavier movement that came through, you know, out of the late 80s into the 90s and the kind of what Dream Theater pioneered throughout the 90s and many other bands sort of just followed in that wake, that heavier, bringing that heavy metal influence into that Beatles songwriting sensibility.
So
that's something that, I mean, we've just sort of arrived at that. Mike's been doing it a long time. Neil's been doing it a long time.
Mm-hmm. He has been doing it a long time.
We've all been doing it a long time. Those guys have had a little bit better success earlier on than I did, but I was fortunate, you know, to have Rick Wakeman sign us in the beginning. He got us in front of a larger audience, and that was great, you know, that we had that opportunity. I, you know, didn't exactly make us rich, but we were grateful that we, you know, we, one of our prog heroes,
liked
us well enough that he'd want to put us out and expose us to the rest of the world. You know, Mike has done that time and time again with fans.
Is.
I mean, he's had Marillion opening. I think Marillion played with Dream Theater. I can't remember.
I think that was like back like 97 or something like that. Yeah.
And then there was Porcupine Tree. Didn't they have Porcupine Tree opening for him at some point?
They did.
Porcupine Tree, you know, Between the Buried and Me on the Prague, was it the...
And then open, all that, you know, kind of a lot stuff, of bands that I think Mike brought to the forefront by giving them the opportunity to open for Dream Theater. So, you know, I think that's kind of one thing that if you're that kind of guy, if you're that kind of person, you're going to see your success and see the opportunity to pass it on to others, to lift others up where you're at.
Yes.
So they have a chance to be seen.
Yes.
You know, and that's a certain kind of person that likes that, but not everybody wants to do that in their musical career, but, you know, there are those who just sort of think that way. So,
and I'm glad that, and I'm glad that they do. I'm glad that you all do, because I know you're one of those people. And you know, I have to tell you, Broken Sky, Long Day Reprise.
That's the one that the lighters go up for.
Okay, so
and the tears come
every time I come in.
That's the crying.
Yeah. Okay. So every time I come in, like if I'm running the board and stuff, and I don't say Jack to Phil, I just put it in, and I just kind of sit there, and he just kind of looks at me, and he's just like, "Okay, you okay?" I'm like, "No." We're gonna listen to the song. We're gonna have a moment. We're not gonna say anything. Okay. Yep. And so, and we do. We have that moment in the studio while everybody else is tuned in. I don't care. And so, you know, it's awesome. It's fantastic. You know, I love what you guys do. Love what you do.
Thank you. We're very grateful that people enjoy it as much as they do.
Good, good. And I enjoy what you also do aside from them, along with your wife. And I can't wait till you name the project. You know, I'm almost kind of curious on what that name is going to be, because, you know, I mean, everybody knows how hard it is to find a name that nobody has used now.
Yeah, that's part of it. But you also want it to embody the whole vibe of what you're doing and how you want to be perceived as a band. Because I've had good names, but they just don't seem right,
right,
given the music.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and that's important, because, you know, that's
the big challenge. But anyway, I think that it'll all fall into place. Yeah, I'm hoping to see that it'll come out. Hope to see if we can get it out late, you know, middle of next year, summer.
Okay,
that's what we're hoping for. I don't know if that'll happen or not, but we're working toward it.
Well, hopefully, when it does, you know, what would be really, really cool is that if we actually got to sit down and we got to talk to your wife. Because I would love to talk to her.
Well, you know, I suppose once we have some more music that you can play,
mm-hmm.
It'd be good to say, we actually have a name for the band. I think she'd be thrilled to do that. So look forward to that.
Absolutely.
We have some more stuff that we can play.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very cool. Well, I know that you know, you have been so cool to stop down and, you know, and take some time with us here on Radio Memphis and Radio Memphis Prog Time, Randy. And we can't thank you enough. You know, and thank you for being always so gracious. You know, when you and spending some time with us here.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me back.
Are you kidding? Any time. You know, and it's so funny because it's like you always come bearing gifts. You know, first you give us your time, and then you give us cool music, and then you give us even more cool music, and then you give us, like, you know, information and stuff. And so, you know, it, like I said, we can't thank you enough for everything you've done.
Awesome. Well, it's a pleasure to hang out on Memphis Rock Radio.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking
Dirty
about.
Dirty
Dan. He just had to say, I knew it. He just had to say, he's just like, dirty. Okay, look. So out of curiosity, that, you know, this song, this next song that we're going to be actually playing for everybody, you know, when we finish up with you, you want to tell everybody about it?
Well, I assume we're playing something off the new Neil Morse Band.
I'm assuming.
Welcome to the World.
Welcome to the World. Well, this is Welcome to the World. Yeah. Well, what can I say? This is...
What is this? I heard, just out of curiosity, I saw someone posting something about Randy's two words that he sings in this song.
Oh. Funny. You know, the funny thing is that, you know, Christian Rios made the video for this, and he has, you know, these different effects that he uses. And in order to do them, he asked if we have to be filmed. Whatever we're doing, we need to be filmed against a white wall doing it. It's just like a neon outline, you know, when you see it on the video. But it's obviously us, you can tell. So, he said, yeah, well, everybody's singing but you on the chorus, so maybe if you sang a few of those Welcome to the Worlds.
Okay.
So I did a second, you know, I did one playing bass, and then I did another one just, you know, mouthing the vocals, and he just put it in there and stuff. But, you know, on the actual track, vocal part that I did is not on Welcome to the World. It's on another part of the album.
Yeah, I saw someone post that, and I just had to do it.
I'm not even sure who it is. It could be, I think it might be Mike. I'm not really sure, but I think they just liked the song. But, you know, in the video, it had, you know, it had my image doing one of them. And so he, you know, it's funny. People see this. It's perception. People see it and just assume, oh, that must be my vocal. You know?
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
it is.
Yeah.
It is now.
the vocals that'll live in infamy. Well, Randy, thank you so much, and you know, I'll shoot you a message with probably the link to this whole interview, so you can share it with people who might not have been able to join us tonight. All right, Randy, thank you so much. Have a good Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And we'll talk soon.
Same to you guys, and look forward to next time.
All right, we'll talk soon, honey.
Right now, we have some Neil Morris Band with Welcome to the World after that great interview with Mr. Randy George.
I know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Welcome to the world!
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.